Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Artisan Partners Asset Management first quarter 2013 earnings conference call. My name is Francis, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the prepared remarks, the management from Artisan Partners Asset Management will conduct a question-and-answer session. The conference participants will be given instructions at that time. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. At this time, I will turn the call over to Makela Taphorn, Artisan's Director of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining our conference call to review Artisan Partners Asset Management's results for the first quarter of 2013. Hosting the call today are Eric Colson, our President and Chief Executive Officer, and C.J. Daley, our Executive Vice President, Chief Financial Officer, and Treasurer. Before Eric begins, I would like to remind you that our first quarter earnings release and the related supplemental presentation materials are available on the investor relations section of our website at www.artisanpartners.com. I would also like to remind you that the comments made on today's call and some of the responses to your questions may deal with forward-looking statements related to Artisan Partners and are subject to risks and uncertainties. Factors that may cause our actual results to differ from expectations are listed under the caption "Forward-Looking Statements" in the earnings release and are detailed in our filings with the SEC. We undertake no obligation to revise these statements following the date of this conference call, except as required by law. In addition, some of the company's remarks this morning include references to non-GAAP financial measures. You can find reconciliations of those measures to the most comparable GAAP measures in the earnings release and exhibits, which are posted on the investor relations section of our website. With that, I will now turn the call over to our President and Chief Executive Officer, Eric Colson.
Thank you, Makela. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Artisan Partners Asset Management business update and quarterly earnings call. I'm Eric Colson, CEO, and I'm joined today by C.J. Daley, our CFO. As we stated on our roadshow, we are in a talent business. Our people are the essence of who we are, and they define our business strategy. We know that time is a precious asset. We value time very highly, so I thank you for your time today and hope you find this discussion useful. I want to spend the first couple of minutes today reviewing the foundation of our business and who we are, mainly because it will set the tone for our communications. I'll review our long-term business strategy and approach using the quarter as a backdrop. We have a business philosophy and framework for how we approach the investment management business, and we want this review to reflect that. Once I'm done, C.J. will take the lead on walking through our financials and our transition to a public company. Flipping to slide two, we have a basic set of business facts. The foundation to our business was set in 1994 by our founders, Andy and Carlene Ziegler. At the time, two secular trends that were taking hold in the market shaped our growth strategy: free agency or talent movement, and open architecture or choice. When we started the company, we had one team and a vision shaped by these trends. In the 18 years since our founding, the attraction of our business model has allowed us to selectively leverage talent movement. We now have five autonomous investment teams highlighted on the lower left of the slide. Open architecture provided investors with choice, and through our distribution network, we have grown to over $80 billion under management across multiple channels highlighted on the bottom right pie chart. The firm is managed by a dedicated business leadership team. Our business leadership team protects our investment culture and focus by managing time in the best interest of our investment teams. Everything we do is consciously designed to create an investment culture that allows our talent to thrive. On page three of our presentation, you can see the three core principles that define who we are. We are a high value-added investment firm designed for investment talent to thrive in a growth-oriented culture. Our principles have evolved over time, but they have been consistent since the firm was founded. As we discuss them, you will note a strong connection among the three, and that is important because any one of these principles can shape a view of our firm. Over the years, we have been known for our strategies, our people, and our culture. However, in our minds, we are the intersection of all three principles. The real importance of knowing and communicating who you are is the ability to set expectations and deliver on those expectations consistently. For example, when our investors look at our portfolio strategies, they want to understand the process and team to develop performance expectations. If the results don't match expectations, our clients lose trust in the process and people. In a people business like ours, you need to manage expectations and deliver a consistent business model. Because if you change the game, you will create instability. We have all seen it happen. We manage our business with a similar mindset to our portfolio strategies. We believe strongly in the philosophy and approach that define who we are. We believe it should be well articulated, and we manage to these principles consistently. In the end, our goal is to build a stable environment for everybody to thrive. Now on slide 4, I'd like to take the discussion from our principles to a more specific discussion of how we approach business management at Artisan Partners, and ultimately how that drives our current strategy. The 4 guideposts noted on page help drive our tactics back to a long-term approach. I'm going to hit on each of these in the context of the quarter, but let me quickly summarize. Our talent focus is the lifeblood of our business. As a result, we spend a lot of time on the development of our people assets, both externally and internally. Investment results are obviously one of the primary measuring tools for our business success, but our evaluation of success looks as much to the execution of the investment process as it does the raw numbers. We obviously look at numbers, but when we do, we look at them from a variety of perspectives. Asset diversification is related to how we grow, and this is immensely important to us. We think that managing our asset mix in a diversified way and with strict financial discipline is critical to long-term business health. We understand we operate in a highly fluid industry, but those guideposts provide strong context to our business strategy. I'm going to come back to each of them on the coming slides, but I want to finish this page off by hitting on the trends driving our strategy. Our business strategy doesn't pivot off a short-term details. They can be distracting. We use the details to identify broad, sometimes obvious trends to drive strategy. Globalization, investment policy evolution, and open architecture solutions are 3 such trends. Since the mid-2000s, our business and investment strategies have been impacted by globalization. From an investment standpoint, this trend has driven more degrees of freedom into our investment strategies by allowing our teams to loosen geographical constraints. On the business side, it has pushed us to leverage our distribution with intermediaries and consultants around the world. Client investment policy statements have tended to evolve over time to incorporate more diverse asset classes and risk inputs driven by events like the TMT bubble and the global credit crisis. With the acceptance of broader categories and new strategies within investment policy statements, we're seeing clients increasingly alter their asset allocation methodology away from the traditional mean variance model using traditional asset classes to risk-based asset allocation using categories such as company-specific risk, liquidity, inflation, interest rate, and other risk categories. This trend is extremely important to Artisan because the newer categories are long-term, global, and supportive of increased investment freedom, create an opportunity in which we're happy to compete. Finally, open architecture platforms have influenced the design of Artisan since day one. Fundamentally, investors and market participants prefer choice to allow a level playing field. To play and compete in this industry, the key is investment results. Our firm is designed to create an environment in which investment talent has the opportunity to deliver performance results. Today, solution-based providers, including target date funds, discretionary consultant models, and implemented broker-dealer solutions, primarily use proprietary products. Similar to the evolution of the defined contribution marketplace in the late 90s and early 2000s, we anticipate these solution-based models will evolve to an open architecture environment, giving us, again, an environment in which we're happy to compete. Having cleared those pages, I want to use our guidepost as an outline for how developments in the quarter intersected with our current strategy, beginning with our talent focus. Our process evaluates individual characteristics, fit with our business model, long-term demand within the institutional framework, and fit with our culture. Similar to our investment teams, we evaluate information and data based on philosophical beliefs and process to provide consistent judgment and insights. One of our portfolio managers reminded us this quarter that data is information, not insights or knowledge. This quarter, our IPO provided us an enormous amount of data. We conducted approximately 50 one-on-one meetings and numerous group meetings that expanded our investment professional network by hundreds of individuals. 250-plus firms invested in our firm at the IPO. Post-IPO, we were amazed by the amount of information and data that we gathered about investment professionals and investment firms. This information has expanded our network immensely. Over time, we plan to convert that data into insights to manage our firm towards our key priorities. Two of our key priorities are investment degrees of freedom and human capital. With respect to human capital, we promoted two individuals this quarter within the global equity team to portfolio manager. Andrew Yurtig and Charles Hamker were promoted to portfolio manager on the global equity strategy. We also began planning for equity awards to recognize value creation within the firm and to align our interests for the long term. We believe that economic alignment for value creation is critical to our business model and expect to grant equity each year. With regards to degrees of freedom, our business continues to globalize in operations and distribution, as well as our client base. Artisan Partners has been investing globally since 1995 with the launch of our first international equity strategy with portfolio manager Mark Yockey. Today, globalization is making the line between U.S. and non-U.S. investing disappear. As I mentioned earlier, with the evolution of investment policy statements supporting diverse categories, we are interested in strategies with greater degrees of investment freedom and growth in emerging markets. Continuing on slide 6 and 7, I want to talk about our investment results. As I mentioned earlier, we measure investment success over a generally defined full market cycle. We focus on longer periods because ultimately our teams invest in businesses. And business owners think about where they want to be in 3, 5, or 10 years. Owners don't run a business 3 months at a time. So when we think about the performance success of our managers, we operate very similarly. Performance data over very short time periods often will reflect liquidity, noise, and market preferences. We think longer periods tend to be a better weighing mechanism to determine success. However, endpoint dependency must be taken into consideration. Our goal is to produce superior investment returns on an absolute and on a relative basis with integrity. So when we look at investment performance, we answer three questions. Have we been faithful to a strategy's stated investment philosophy and process? To us, that's investing with integrity. Has the process produced good absolute performance? And third, how does the strategy's performance compare to the performance of its peers, competitors, and benchmarks? As of March 31st, 11 of our 12 investment strategies had added value relative to their broad performance benchmarks over the trailing 5-year and 10-year periods and since each strategy's inception. All 12 strategies have good absolute performance and followed their objectives with integrity. Slide 7 further reinforces the impact of our performance philosophy across our asset base. Our teams run active portfolios with fairly high degrees of investment freedom. Each also adheres to a time-tested investment process. None have a process or incentives that place much value on very short time frames. Therefore, the return patterns of all of our teams will be lumpy. That is evident in our 1-year returns. But each has proven to compound wealth for clients and outperform the indices long term, as indicated by nearly 100% of the assets outdistancing the benchmarks over the 5-year, 10-year, and since inception timeframes. And this obviously translates well to peer ratings, which are highlighted at the bottom of the page. My last slide, before turning it over to CJ, is really just a summary of our distribution strategy. We focus on sophisticated investors with a long-term horizon, which makes for a more consistent asset base. We're deliberate about allocating capacity to particular distribution channels to provide diversification in our asset base. And we have a disciplined approach to fees because it is critical to talent retention. Managed well together, we think these characteristics contribute to stability in our business mix and investment teams. In our view, the combination also creates a more consistent cash flow stream, which yields a higher and more predictable present value. At the end of the first quarter, our assets under management exceeded $80 billion due to a strong combination of organic growth and market appreciation. Importantly, we had positive net client cash flow in 10 of our 12 strategies, 4 of our 5 investment teams, and 4 of our 5 distribution channels, generated by clients domiciled in the U.S. and abroad. We think that these are the kind of short-term data points that will push us towards our long-term business goals. Asset diversification by team, distribution channel, investment vehicle, and geography. With that, I'll turn it over to CJ.
Thanks, Eric. Good afternoon, everyone. Slide 9 starts the review of our first quarter results. As of March 31, 2013, our company's assets under management were $83.2 billion, a 12% increase over AUM at December 31, 2012, and a 25% increase over AUM at March 31 of 2012. The increase during the first quarter was achieved as a result of $2.2 billion of net client cash inflows, which equates to a 3% organic growth rate for the quarter and a 12% annualized growth rate, as well as 9% of market appreciation. The increase in AUM over the last 12 months was achieved as a result of $6.6 billion of net client cash inflows, a 10% annual organic growth rate, and 15% of market appreciation. Average AUM for the first quarter was $79.2 billion, so our ending assets under management were 5% higher than average AUM on which we recorded our revenues for the quarter. March 31 was the end of our first but partial quarter as a public company and included numerous transactions related to our initial public offering. Our GAAP results include significant charges related to the reorganization, including mark-to-market expense of our pre-IPO partners' equity and other compensation-related charges incurred as a result of the IPO, totaling $476 million. The quarter also included a mark-to-market gain of $25 million on our contingent value right liability and the previously disclosed charge for severance and cash retention awards that end in 2013. We present adjusted earnings on adjusted shares, which represents our earnings adjusted primarily for pre-IPO compensation expenses. So, on an adjusted basis, earnings were $33.2 million or 47 cents per share for the quarter. Keep in mind that this figure includes a 9-cent reduction for the cash retention expenses and a first quarter severance charge. As a result of these items, our adjusted operating margin of 37% was negatively impacted by 630 basis points in the March quarter. The reconciliation of GAAP to non-GAAP results is on slide 16. The remainder of my comments will reflect our non-GAAP adjusted earnings on adjusted share results. We believe our adjusted results are a better representation of our results, and it's what we as management use to assess business performance. We exclude the impact of pre-IPO income and expense and eliminate the large non-controlling interest by assuming that all limited partner interests in the partnership have been exchanged for shares of the public company. So adjusted net income per adjusted share represents our results as if the partnership was 100% owned by the public company. Moving on to slide 10. AUM at March 31, 2013 was $83.2 billion. That's up 12% from December 31, 2012 and 5% higher than average AUM of $79.2 billion for the first quarter. AUM increased in the March quarter primarily as a result of market appreciation of $6.7 billion and net client inflows of $2.2 billion. Our inflows this quarter reflect increased client activity, which is typical for the first quarter of each year, as investors update investment allocations, and resume 401k contributions. We benefited from that increased activity as 10 of our 12 strategies and 4 of our 5 distribution channels saw positive flow activity generated by clients in the U.S. and abroad. We are pleased with the diversification of our growth this quarter. On slide 11, you can see that we are continuing to build our non-U.S. client base, with assets from non-U.S. clients growing $1.3 billion in the quarter to $9.2 billion, or 11% of total AUM. Non-U.S. client inflows this quarter accounted for 30% of our net flows. Slide 12 shows our financial results for the first quarter compared to both our preceding December quarter and the first quarter of 2012. For the March 2013 quarter, revenues were $148 million on average AUM of $79.2 billion. That's an increase in revenues of 8% over the December 2012 quarter and 24% over the March 2012 quarter. The average management fee across all strategies and products was 76 basis points, flat from both the preceding and prior year's quarters. Adjusted operating income for the quarter, which excludes IPO-related compensation charges, was $54.9 million. That translates to a 37% adjusted operating margin. Our adjusted margin this quarter is lower when compared to the December and the March 2012 quarters due to increased cash retention and severance expenses in this year's March quarter. The impact of this increase to the current quarter margin was approximately 420 basis points when compared to the fourth quarter and first quarter of 2012. Adjusted net income was $33.2 million for the current quarter, compared to $34.0 million in the December 2012 quarter. Our higher first quarter revenues were offset by higher operating expenses due to the increase in cash retention and severance expenses in the first quarter of 2013, as we previously mentioned. Overall, the increase in cash retention and severance expenses in the current quarter negatively impacted net income by $4.1 million after taxes, or 6 cents per adjusted share when compared to the December 2012 quarter. On slide 13, I'd like to spend some time explaining how we view our compensation ratio and our largest expense, compensation and benefits. As a result of the IPO-related compensation, our compensation ratio was significantly elevated compared to prior quarters. However, on a core expense basis, adjusting for the IPO-related compensation, severance, cash retention, and seasonal effects, our compensation ratio has consistently been in the 41 to 42% range. When looking at run rate compensation expense for future quarters and years, there are a few items to keep in mind. First, the cash retention award amortization that is in this quarter will end at the end of the year. This is roughly $3 million, or 2% of revenues, this quarter that will go away at the end of 2013. Second, seasonal benefits expenses will be higher in the first quarter of each year. The impact this quarter was $2.3 million, or 1.6% of revenues. Last, we expect to issue equity grants in the future. Over the next several years, as we layer in post-IPO equity awards, which we will expect will be in the 2% range on average, we expect our compensation ratio will grow to the mid-40% range. Of course, the size of the equity grants each year and related expenses will vary based on the rate of sustainable growth actually achieved and our stock value, which impacts the amount of expense we will amortize over the five-year vesting period. The last slide on capital management highlights the strengthening of our balance sheet as a result of our IPO and the application of the IPO proceeds. Cash ended the quarter at $199 million, debt was reduced to $200 million, and total equity is slightly positive at $6 million. That's substantially improved from negative equity of $673 million at December 31, 2012. Our debt-to-leverage ratio is at 0.9 times leverage. In closing, the March quarter was a productive quarter from a business and capital management perspective. We completed a successful initial offering of our stock, which closed on March 12, enjoyed increasing levels of AUM in the quarter, healthy net client cash inflows, which annualized at an organic growth rate of 12%, and continued strong performance in most of our strategies. These factors give us confidence that we are well positioned for the remainder of 2013.
Thanks, CJ. In closing, we are proud of our business model and investment results, and we appreciate our success in the IPO and the confidence you have shown in us by becoming shareholders. We will communicate to you about our business and the way that we think about it, and will provide information for your insights and knowledge. We appreciate your time and your interest. We will now open the call for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask your audio questions, you may press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been asked or you wish to withdraw your question, you may press star 2. Your first question comes from the line of Bill Katz from Citigroup. You may proceed.
Okay, thanks so much. I actually have one quick modeling question and a couple of bigger picture questions. CJ, in terms of your comp guidance, I apologize, I was taking notes, but I just can't read my own handwriting. When you said you're mid-40s on the comp ratio, is that before or after the equity grants?
That's after the equity grants. As we grow and issue more equity and the equity starts to amortize on a fully loaded basis in 5 years, we'll have a full quarter's worth of amortization and then growth on the upside.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Eric, you mentioned sort of this unconstrained model, if you will, and asset allocation go anywhere. How constrained, if at all, are you by having sort of an equity centricity? I mean, has that sort of shift your thinking in terms of free cash flow usage from a team perspective? And maybe you could triangulate to what you're seeing outside the United States, given a 30% annualized growth rate in new business there.
Yeah, obviously we've seen the equity flows have been fairly positive here. Our thinking hasn't changed of what we look at for new investment teams or how we look to invest in the business. And outside the U.S. has been fairly strong for us on the cash on the flows coming in, a little weaker than the U.S., but when we look at our pipeline, it looks quite strong, about 50% coming in from outside the U.S. and 50% from the U.S. Does that answer your question, Bill, or is that it seems like I missed it?
Part of it, I guess the question is, in terms of the asset, you talked about asset allocation being an important point differentiation for your franchise, and when you look at some of your other competitors, they have a bit more of a diversification across that asset allocation, including alternatives and fixed income, if you will. Obviously doing very well on the equity side. So just sort of wondering where you are in terms of the evolution of your thinking in terms of other teams at this point in time, or is there just enough momentum in the core business now that's still more of a selective approach?
Certainly, my reference to the asset allocation was really addressing the seasonality effect that's occurring in the marketplace right now, that we've seen, in our view, more investors be disciplined within asset allocation this year, using their targets and reallocating and rebalancing back to equity. So that asset allocation effect has been beneficial for us, as opposed to us trying to diversify across other asset classes. If we find a good asset allocation team or macro team or a team that can play the asset allocation spectrum, we're open to that and adding them. But my comment in the opening remarks was really around the seasonality effect and the increase in equity assets.
Okay, just one last one for me, and thanks for taking all my questions. If you add back the severance charge of $9.3 million, to your adjusted operating income, you get an adjusted margin of about 43%. And I'm sort of curious, as you think about go forward, is that a reasonable run rate to reinvest back in the business? I think during the roadshow you had mentioned that you think you can get it to mid-40s, but you'd govern that just given the need to reinvest. So the question is, do we get there fast forward and we're sort of stopping from here, or is there more upside from here?
No, Bill, I think it's a combination of, offsetting that growth. I mean, the growth will take the margin up, but we have to start layering in the equity comp. So I think this quarter, with the strong growth in both the markets and organic growth, you saw that spike. But we'll be layering in some equity compensation expense over the next coming quarters as we do our first public equity grant. So our thinking really hasn't changed around that mid-40s over the next couple of years.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Kim from Sandler O'Neill. You may proceed.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. First, can you just talk about RFP activity in the pipeline in the institutional channel in terms of some of the moving parts that you may be seeing across the various teams? And then related to that, what's the feedback you're getting from consultants as it relates to kind of rebalancing or replacement activity?
Hi, Michael. It's Eric. The institutional client base and even the intermediary channel was very disciplined this year. In our mind, we've seen past years where groups were more tactical, or they would maintain their fixed income allocation despite their asset allocation stating they should rebalance back to equities or other asset classes. This year, we've seen more discipline in rebalancing. So we saw quite a bit of activity in the intermediary channel. And that's also helped our pipeline and RFP activity. And we look year over year, we've improved on the activity with more search opportunities, more RFPs, and a broader allocation across our strategies.
Okay. And then maybe question for CJ, just to kind of follow up on the margin discussion. It does seem like there could be some pressure on fee rates as maybe the mix shifts towards separate accounts and newer strategies, and then also a fair amount of your expenses are variable. So just wondering where you kind of see the incremental leverage in the model beyond compensation. Are there further efficiencies in G&A or occupancy that you can that can kind of move the needle, if you will?
Yeah. There are just efficiencies built in our model. Approximately 65% of our expenses are variable. That leaves 35% that there's leverage just by the nature of our business. And, our assets can grow to some point without us having to add, additional infrastructure. So, there's natural leverage in our model. And as we look out the next couple of years, we see as we continue to grow, we see our margin increasing, but being offset by the layering in of the equity compensation expense.
Got it. And then just one clarification, the cash retention expense going forward, did you say you expect an incremental $3 million of related costs in the second quarter? And then what's the outlook beyond that? Is there any further costs in the second half of the year? Thanks.
Yeah, that was a retention award that was issued in 2011. As we were thinking about our initial transition from a partnership to a public company, and that amortization in the $2 to $3 million range ends in December of 2013. So you'll see, $2 to $3 million of expense each of the next three quarters, and then that will cease to exist.
Got it. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thanks.
And your next question will come from the line of Mark Irizarry from Goldman Sachs. You may proceed.
Oh, great. Thanks. So first question, just on the fee rate, I think you said 76 basis points, flattish. What impact, if any, did the day count have on that? Did that pressure it? And then also you said 30% of your client inflows are coming from non-U.S. clients. I'm just curious, as you grow that business, what sort of fee compression, if any, should we expect to see from that?
Yeah. Hey, Mark, how are you? So I think, what we saw this year was, at least in this quarter, we had a fair amount of activity in our pooled vehicles, whereas in last year we saw a fair amount of growth in our separate accounts, and and the major impact to our fee rate is going to be, you know, which channel we add assets. And so, you know, this year we're seeing a trend towards the pooled vehicles, which has helped our fee rate. But as we've, you know, as we've discussed, you know, we see over the next, you know, several years as we continue to build our assets overseas, which are more through separate accounts, we'll see that start to trend down a couple basis points, you know, as we grow.
Okay, and then Eric, any update on talent acquisitions, and just, you know, maybe this gets back to the, you know, sort of the mix, business mix in terms of your assets. You know, you said you've had a lot of conversations throughout the roadshow process. You know, how should we be thinking about talent acquisitions in terms of timing and bringing new teams on?
Certainly, Mark. There's no set timing that we can pinpoint and say that we're going to do one or two teams every year. The comments earlier were around the amount of information and data that's coming through. The public process provided us more exposure into the marketplace, so our networks expanded. We will continue to comb through those networks, and we'll continue to work with individuals and teams to see if they're a fit with our organization. But as of today, you know, we have a few teams that we're looking at and talking to, but no specifics on any onboarding.
Okay, and then just in terms of flows, can you give us some color on flows, you know, by strategy, I guess, and also, you know, particularly for strategies like global equity that just hit their three-year number, are you starting to see a pickup there? So maybe just a little bit more color on maybe capacity by strategy and also global equity now.
Yeah, certainly. We had a good quarter. The global value team continues to do well. The global value strategy was a very diverse asset mix coming from both separate account and pooled vehicles. There was more assets coming in the pooled vehicles than the separate account, and had a good mix of clients coming outside the U.S. That strategy will slow down, or that team will slow down its assets. As you know, we have a soft close on our international value strategy, and we've closed the separate accounts on global value. The other teams, clearly the global equity team has done well with the international equity strategy, and as you mentioned, the global equity has hit its three-year track record and has been rated five stars by Morningstar. And you see the pipeline building nicely in the global equity team for the international growth strategy and global equity. So we think that will balance out our flows more in line over the in the next year. Currently, we're seeing quite a bit of demand and continued demand for our growth team with the global opportunities strategy. The team overall had nice flows, and it has quite a bit of capacity with global opportunity and some capacity left in small cap growth. Our U.S. value team has performed quite well in the mid-cap value. The last couple of quarters in small cap value has been off the mark a bit, and value equity is starting to show a nice pipeline for us. And we've had obviously a lot of wind at our back with regards to the emerging markets asset class. The emerging markets performance long term has been 100 or so basis points behind the index since inception. We lost a significant piece of business there, but we also gained a large account around $200 million in emerging markets. So there's still quite a bit of opportunity in EM, and we continue to look for opportunities there.
Okay, and then just quickly on EM, did you, you know, in the pipeline, any redemptions that you see coming from EM, or did you sort of stem the tide there?
We have some you know, clients that we're watching, but there's no clients that has indicated to us that we see assets leaving. We've seen a very healthy pipeline there, and we're in a nice diversifier to many of the assets and assets allocated into ETFs. I mean, it's If you look at the emerging markets ETF, it's one of the largest funds in the marketplace. And I think the March quarter was the first time you saw some ETF flows go negative, and it was in the bottom five versus December and January had extraordinary flows into the ETF. And those flows that are leaving are looking for products that will diversify against that large market cap orientation. So we continue to see quite a bit of opportunity there. But we are cautious on the clients given the performance lag.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, please press star 1 to ask a question. Your next question is from the line of Robert Lee from KBW. You may proceed.
Thanks, and good afternoon, and congratulations on your first earnings call. Let's see, a couple of quick questions. Most of mine have been asked, but you clearly have a strategy of from time to time opening and closing products, you know, as capacity, not maybe capacity, but as flows and whatnot, you know, ebb and flow. I mean, can you maybe update us? Are there any products right now where, you know, maybe you're seeing, you know, pretty strong flows where you're thinking there may be need for, you know, at least a temporary closure, or conversely, any products that maybe are closed, even if they're still getting flows, you're thinking you have capacity now to open more broadly?
We do spend quite a bit of time on the mix of assets. We think it's extremely important to manage the fee rate and the diversification. At times you see strategies go out of favor or performance slide, and we've opened for limited capacity. At this point, we don't have any strategies that we're opening for capacity on a growth or just velocity of assets. And to manage our mix, the area that we continue to focus on is the global value team, and we are closed in the international value strategy, and we have closed the separate accounts in global value, but maintain an open position in our pool vehicles. And we saw, you know, a nice flow in both our mutual fund and our UCITS for global value that outpaced our separate accounts. I think the management of that mix is going well, and that's the only strategies that we're watching the mix.
Okay, and maybe looking at the new business pipeline, you know, Eric, you did mention that, you know, you're seeing pretty good activity and feel good about your pipelines. Is it at all possible in any way to maybe, you know, put some kind of, you know, quantification or color around that? I don't know if there's a dollar amount of, you know, won but not funded mandates, you know, kind of out there, or, you know, some color maybe on, you know, RFP activity is, you know, up 10% year over year, or anything that we can kind of, you know, put our arms around a little bit.
Yes, you know, I did mention that the overall activity is up, you know, year over year. So we clearly have seen more assets and the number of searches when we look over the same time period as last year. I don't have a specific number on that. It's up, you know, at least 10%, and if not greater, on that number. And, you know, from an unfunded wins, we've been tracking that. And for the second quarter, it looks like currently in the second quarter, we're approximately around $1 billion of unfunded wins.
Great. That's very helpful. And one last question for CJ, and I apologize. It's been a long day for all of us, so this is probably obvious, but you know, when I look at the your comp and I know the $9 million of severance and retention, understanding that the retention is going to continue for another, you know, through the rest of the year, but you know, when you talk about the 6 cents, you know from the severance and retention, you're not talking about that's how much earnings this quarter were reduced by it. That's just the relative to the Q4. Should be obvious,
yeah,
but it's been a long
time. Yeah, that's the delta between this quarter and the prior quarters.
Okay.
In total, the impact just to this quarter would have been 9 cents.
Great. All right, just wanted to confirm. Thanks for taking my questions, guys.
You're welcome.
Your next question is from the line of Cynthia Mayer from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. You may proceed.
Hi, thanks a lot. I guess since you mentioned rebalancing, do you see any seasonality in this in the first quarter flows, or is there anything in there that you think might not repeat?
Hi, Cynthia. It's Eric. I do see quite a bit of just seasonality if you back out and we ask ourselves, did we see any change in people's investment policy statements or asset allocation where they've upticked the allocation to public equities? And we certainly haven't seen changes in the policies or asset allocation. I think we've seen, as I mentioned, people be more disciplined and strategic in their asset allocation for rebalancing as opposed to tactical asset allocation. And that tactical asset allocation went against public equities a year ago, and I think that probably muted the seasonality last year in 2012 and 2011, and people were more disciplined back to their strategic asset allocation. I think we also saw, from a manager structure standpoint, which is the mix of, how people allocate within an asset class, for example, equities, you manage the mix between passive and active, you manage the mix by style box or by geography, and we see more people looking at active strategies and balancing the mix. Given the explosion of passive assets, I think you've seen a little bit more balancing there. And when you add that all together, it's hard to add that up and say that there's a real sustainable mindset that people are just up in their public equity equity allocations, and it seemed more seasonal and more disciplined than years past.
When you've seen that pattern in the past, does that, would you expect that to persist a little bit into second quarter, just in terms of people making decisions, but then maybe putting the assets in later or taking longer to make the decisions? I'm just trying to gauge, looking at the flows, they're pretty good. Is there anything that we should assume doesn't, continue into the second quarter simply because this is more of a first quarter activity?
Oh, I would state that this the amount of activity is clearly a first quarter activity, and it should decrease over the next couple of quarters. And you see a little bit of uptick back in the fourth quarter. We'll see more of our institutional oriented clients rebalance over time. But the assets that came in the first quarter was primarily through the intermediary channels. And more seasonal, and I wouldn't extend those to second quarter.
Okay. And then I guess just to clarify something on the equity awards, those will layer in over 5 years, right? So those are expensed as a fixed amount, right, not variable? And
yeah, that's correct. We plan to grant our annual equity in July of each year, and they'll have 5-year vesting periods. And typically what happens is you for accounting rules, you price them at the date of grant and amortize those pro rata over the 5 years.
Right. So if, for instance, the market were to sell off, there wouldn't be any, those would still be expensed at the higher amount because they're just based on
correct.
The price of the stock at the time. Okay.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. And then maybe last one, a little bit on the, can you give us a little color on the process of searching for teams and evaluating them? Who internally, is there anybody focused on that full time? Is there, who's most involved in evaluating them? Are the founders still involved in that?
Yeah. Hi, Cynthia, it's Eric on that question. It primarily comes to my desk, but we, obviously have our analysts and our portfolio managers out talking to individuals, and in many cases they give me names of people that impress them. Our founder, Andy Ziegler, is a strong sounding board for ideas, and if a name does come across, he would certainly pass along to myself and vet that new team. But new idea generation out of
of Andy is limited. It's now more of a sounding board. And it's really the ideas come from a network. There's a strong group of headhunters to bankers to peers that we collect ideas and bring to my desk, and then we have a group that evaluates the opportunity.
Great. All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Cynthia.
At this time, we have no other questions. I'd like to turn the call back over to Mr. Eric Colson for your final remarks.
Great. Thank you very much. We know it was a long day for all of you, and truly appreciate your time. And we're very pleased with the IPO and the results, and want to thank you for your time today.
And ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your presentation. You may now disconnect and have a great day.